U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
And Kathy Dawes now, along with Dr. Timothy Schaefer and or Tim, Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. I don't want to make it sound so formal.
Very few people call me doctor. After I got my PhD, there was probably about 2 weeks where I really, I'm Dr. Schaefer. And my oldest daughter at that time, she called me Dr. Daddy, which I thought was very sweet. And then after that, just about nobody cares. I don't know what that says about those who are aspiring maybe to go on for academic degrees, but don't do it for the title. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Well, of course, and we were talking about, just different things that we work with in today's day and age. And obviously we were talking groups and we were talking Virginia and some of the difficulties that way. But, I would say even when we talk about relationships with people that we're close to, there can be some issues anymore these days, it seems like, more and more.
Yeah, this is something that I'm teaching a course right now, undergrads, called Small Group Discussion Methods is basically what the technical title is. But I teach it as kind of democracy in these small groups. And we often talk about these public settings. And so a lot of the things that I've talked about here before, public discussions and those sorts of things. But there's another element of this that is much more intimate. It's closer. It's the family settings. It's the close relationships. And it's always interesting. The students often will talk about the tensions and challenges that come from interacting with one another, and they'll talk about the roommates and the people who are doing the dishes or not, those who are kind of leaving the messes or not cutting the grass, whatever it might be. And sometimes those things can sound trivial, but they can end up kind of blowing up. And and for family situations too, whether we're talking about kind of an immediate nuclear family or broader, that people are coming from different places and experiences, and the tensions, back to the point you were making earlier, the tensions that people, I think, feel right now in a very heavy way weigh on us, whether we're realizing it or not. And so sometimes those things can manifest in the very mundane, and all of a sudden we're wondering why we're having a fight about, where we're going to dinner or what's going to happen in that regard. But there are these larger kind of environmental factors that can often play into that. And especially right now, people are feeling really just kind of on edge.
Well, and I don't know if we're almost delving into a little bit of psychology at this point.
Yeah,
I'm sure you deal with that
a little bit,
when you're talking about discourse.
Social psychology.
We need to continue to respect each other, but you reach that point where it goes out the window, people get emotional. I think that's a lot of what happened with Virginia. But, I mean, people just don't stop and really listen to each other.
Yeah, one of the field that I kind of reside in, the deliberative democracy field, there were some arguments that were made as recent decades of the ideal for public discourse is that we're rationally engaging in conversation and discussion. So I'm backing up what I'm saying with factual information, with whatever my claims are, they're going to be grounded in information. And we'll hear this sometimes from people of like, leave your emotions at the door, right? Just come in. We're just going to talk about the facts. But we know from psychology and other fields that it's really hard, if not impossible, to kind of leave behind some of those elements. And that's one of these challenges that we have in thinking about this work, is how do we recognize and sometimes mitigate the things that what drives somebody into a conversation, into a room or in a public space. It's deeply affecting them as a person. So, the Charlottesville incident, the case there, the deep sense of identity for all who were involved is whether you agree with it or not. And I would fundamentally say some of those things are you can only rationalize to an extent. But that you have to acknowledge that there is something deeply held by people that drives them to these kinds of either actions or articulations that can end up leading to violence. And that's really an important thing to note, and then figure out how do we navigate or mitigate some of those things.
Do want to remind our listeners, as always, phone lines are open, 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350, or you can tweet us at 1350KMAN. It almost makes you wonder. I mean, of course, we're a country of free speech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we pride ourselves on that. But then you look at these, and a lot of the demonstrations are just so emotionally charged mm-hmm. right now. I mean, what is the answer?
Yeah, I mean, and this is something true on college campuses. You know, the discussion about free speech. I know that's there's been a lot made about UC Berkeley last year when people were being invited and disinvited and things of that sort. And now all of these folks are basically going to come speak, those who are more politically to the right or far right, as some people would say. And the free speech movement was born at Berkeley, you know, in the 60s. And this idea of the university, and that's one of the things I appreciate about being at a university, is that it's an environment where there are a whole lot of different people from different places, different viewpoints. And there can be moments when you just wholeheartedly agree with what's being said, and you wonder why not everybody just agrees with that. And then there are other times that you'll hear a speaker, or you'll be in a discussion with colleagues or with students, and you're just like, you're almost aghast at what's been said. But that's part of I think for a democratic society, we have to wrestle with through these things. And it's true for some of the public work that we do. You know, not all ideas are equal or great, but there is an importance to recognize that we need spaces for these things to be articulated. And then, you know, if it's a really bad position, like then go through the channels that appropriately will say that's a good idea or that's a bad idea, and to figure it out that way rather than with sticks and clubs and guns and things of that sort, because that's not going to get us very far.
You know, sometimes, too, and I don't know if we perhaps lose sight. I mean, there are other things that are going on aside. I mean, these are important issues, don't get me wrong. Yeah. These are things that need to be dealt with, obviously. But there's so many other things, too, that it almost seems like they get lost in the shuffle. We had an agriculture summit here in Manhattan mm-hmm. last week, spoke to several people that were there. And, you know, you sometimes wonder if people lose sight of what farmers are going through. They're yeah. struggling right now. There's a lot of debt. They mm-hmm. get so involved in some of these other things that they tend to forget other things that are going on, too.
Yeah, I think right now one of the challenges is just purely fatigue. I feel it, mental fatigue. Every day something new is happening at a national political scale, often with reverberations at the state or local level. And that's, you know, that's challenging part for two reasons. One, professionally, but also just personally, because I like to be an informed citizen. I keep aware of these things, and there are moments where I just feel like I need to just turn all these things off, if for nothing else, just to be able to accomplish the work that I need to do. But, you know, to your point, there are myriad issues that are affecting our communities, and how do we find a degree of balance, or acknowledge that there's just so many things that are happening right now we need to attend to, and it's impacting. I mean, these things are all interwoven and interconnected. So when we're talking about agricultural issues or economic concerns, those are playing into some of these national discussions about whether or not we still participate in NAFTA, or as I saw the president tweeted, talking about tariffs. I mean, these kinds of things have large implications for the, you know, the farmer just north of Manhattan or someplace else. And so we have to recognize that kind of interconnectedness, but it's hard not to get just utterly consumed by what's the front page or what's the headline, what's the thing, the notification on your phone, which, you know, if you're like me, you subscribe to a few different media outlets, and all of a sudden you're getting four or five things for everything, and it just feels like a lot.
Do we need more eclipses? I mean, we're talking about how that to bring us together.
That would be nice. You know, there is something powerful about those incidents when we have the chance to get out of that immediate political world.
We do have a quick phone call, only a few minutes left before the top of the hour. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, our pastor made an interesting point yesterday morning in his sermon. He says, today we get more information in a 24-hour period than a person did for a whole year in 1850.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. Thanks for that comment. We don't have a lack of information. We just have an inundation of information, and figuring out how to make some sense of it. You know, all the various sources, where it's coming from. There are so many channels, the outlets. I mean, the fact it's hard to forget sometimes that it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have this thing called the internet as we know it, and just this. The sheer capacity to tap into virtually anything you want. And as the caller just noted, we have to deal with that. I mean, it's frankly kind of a deluge. And so there was, you know, the argument could be easily made that when we had the three networks, right, that everybody was sitting down and basically watching the same things, that could be seen as both positive but also as a negative. But now we've got this, you know, this such a range of diversity of perspectives and voices and of kind of niche markets and things like that, it becomes, you know, similarly a challenge. We may now have this marketplace of opportunity of positions, but we're losing it. We've fallen into our own little kind of camps, and we're losing that thread that hangs some of it together. But as the caller said, we're confronted with so much, and what do we do with that?
Good point, listener. Yeah. We do appreciate you calling in. I mean, there were days when you'd wait for, you wouldn't know much at all what was going on in the rest of the nation, unless he pointed at 1850. Is that what he said?
Yeah, he said 1850. And, you know, I spend a lot of time studying the early 20th century. And, you know, here was when the radio was starting to really be adopted, mm-hmm. and starting to show up in all these homes. But before that, I mean, it was a different kind of climate and a landscape. And you had a different pace at which you were consuming media, or even just frankly being aware of it. So your concerns were much more local.
Well, thanks again to Tim Schaefer for joining us today, and of course, Kansas State University Assistant Professor, also with the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. And you've been listening to In Focus on News Radio KMAN.